Hello, my name is Rebecca MacLeod, and this is the DNA of Purpose podcast, proudly brought to you by Future Crunch.
Everything that goes out is affecting something. So what's your impact?
What I see is a huge amount of people from around the world that really want that transformation and they really want that change.
We are the improbable manifestation of the most profound creation this magnificent universe has to offer.
Hello and welcome to season 4, episode 1 of the DNA of Purpose podcast. I have to say it's great to be back on the airwaves. My name is Rebecca MacLeod. Yes, I did get married over the holidays, hence the name change. And I am so excited to be bringing another year of wisdom to the airwaves from some of the most purpose-driven people on the planet. You would think that after 3 years of hosting this podcast, that I would have, you know, got a fairly strong grip on the nature of purpose. And don't get me wrong, I certainly have noticed patterns in every conversation I have had, but at the same time, in staying true to the ethos of Future Crunch, it is always wise to have strong opinions held lightly. And for that reason, as much as I know about purpose and the light that this concept brings to so many lives, at the same time, I am unafraid of asking the more challenging questions. Questions that, in answering them, enable us to get closer to a true description of what purpose is. One that is genuinely useful for leaders and leaders in life. Seeking to use purpose as a tool to influence better outcomes personally, professionally, and for the planet. In this conversation, there is also an acknowledgement of the fact that our destination is unknown. We have seen over the last 2 years that nothing in this world is certain, and that means we must always be willing to acknowledge that purpose itself and the description of what it means will continue to evolve. My job is to simply translate what we know to be true today. So let's take a look at purpose. There's no denying there are great, amazing feats of human ingenuity happening in families, in communities, and in organizations all over the world. Science can prove that purpose, when paired with a sense of belonging, creates a positive influence in our biochemistry. There are also studies on organizational purpose, stressing that purpose is necessary for reconnecting people, providing shared understanding, and creating a sense of meaning. All of these things are good for us and, of course, good for the world. However, there is another side to this coin. Some thought leaders have touted that the purpose movement is already over and that the integrity of brands making purpose all about them rather than about human transformation lacks a depth of integrity. Other people I have interviewed have spoken about the idea that maybe we need to think about our expectation of what purpose should be and where it should live in order to ignite the meaning that we seek in our lives. In addition to that, there is a frenzy of social media activity with some people shouting out loud about having a purpose, living a purpose, and creating an impact. They are grand and sometimes altruistic statements that include vague commitments of making the world a better place. I put my hand up here. I have on many occasions been one of those people. But at the same time, in my, I guess, next steps as an advocate for purpose, I want to pause a little bit on the purpose PR trail and take a deeper look. What does all of this really mean to you personally and for leaders in organizations who care deeply but also need to drive the growth of that organization? What does it really mean to them? So as you can see, during my recent sabbatical from the podcast, I've been thinking a lot about what all of this means. I even questioned whether to continue this podcast at one point or if purpose was the right subject. But the thing is, I have come so far, and yet for all of the questions I have asked, there are still so many questions left unanswered. That said, over the last 3 years, there are many questions that I have answered, and today I want to share with you where I've landed and present to you a snapshot of my personal thesis on what the DNA of purpose is all about, and this is part one. You can think of today's episode as a benchmark that you can launch off to begin your own journey and to ignite your own questions and your own evolution on the role of purpose in your life, personally, professionally, or on a planetary level. But before doing that, in true Future Crunch style, I want to share with you a few stories as to what inspires me on a personal level to keep going. Stories of incredible humans that have been featured in the most recent Future Crunch newsletters. Stories that showcase how each and every one of us have inside of us the power to create positive change. Welcome to the podcast for 2022. This is a story of Mr. Borbologoglu's penguins. That is a tongue twister. Pablo Garcia Borbologoglu is a 52-year-old biologist in Patagonia who has dedicated his life to studying and protecting the world's penguin populations. His global conservation effort has saved over 1.6 million penguins and created 32 million acres of protected ocean and coastal habitat. Pablo's passion for penguins was inspired by his grandmother. As a young boy, Pablo was captivated by her bedtime stories about travelling by horse and cart in the 1920s across Argentina to the Atlantic coast to see the penguin colonies. Pablo chose to study law at university and pursue a career as an ambassador, but never forgot his grandmother's stories. In the late 1980s, Pablo took a sabbatical from his studies to join volunteers in southern Argentina who were saving penguins from oil spills that were killing 40,000 birds a year. Although Pablo helped save thousands of birds, washing each one with soap and water, he knew a bigger change was needed. "When I released the first one back into the wild," he said, "it clicked. I realised that one individual action can have a big impact, so I started to scale up." By raising public awareness around the issue, Pablo forced the Argentine government to create new tanker routes and prompted oil companies to change their practices. Pablo returned to university to earn a PhD in biology and spent the next 3 decades researching penguins and working with governments around the world to make informed decisions about conservation. In 2009, Pablo established the Global Penguin Society with a mission to protect the 18 different species of penguins through scientific research, the management of habitats, and public education. The organisation has established numerous protected areas to safeguard nesting and feeding areas and has involved more than 7,000 children in education programs because Pablo believes change begins with them. He was quoted as saying, "The only way to be healthy is to be connected to wildlife. When we benefit penguins, we benefit the oceans, and we also benefit people." And in more news, I want to share a story about first aid for mental health in Bangladesh. Firuz Fazai Beethar is a young woman in Bangladesh who has transformed her battle with depression into a movement that is challenging deep-rooted stigmas around mental health and giving thousands of young people access to help wherever and whenever they need. Born and raised in Khulna, Firuz was only 13 years old when her father was murdered. As an only child, she carried the trauma alone, and her mother, recognizing her daughter's depression, got Firuz the help that she needed. Although talk therapy was regarded as taboo in her country, the experience ignited a deep calling to raise awareness and to help other people who were struggling. While studying at her local university, Firuz was part of a group assignment that asked students to identify a social problem and design a solution. To tackle the issue of mental health, Firuz and her peers created a simple online form to connect anonymous visitors with mental health counsellors, but struggled to find enough qualified professionals. Inspired by a term in psychology known as para-counsellors, the team changed their strategy to a first aid service for mental health by empowering people to provide emergency mental support to others. In 2018, Firuz launched the Mona School, a youth-led mental health platform providing education, para-counselling workshops and a 24/7 online first aid service, as well as contact with mental health professionals. To increase awareness, Firuz has openly shared her struggles with depression, and despite being initially shamed, the stigma in Bangladesh is beginning to fade. In 2021, the Mona School organised the country's biggest mental health workshop, reaching 11,000 youth across Bangladesh. Firuz is now turning her focus to giving primary school children the same tools that helped her overcome tragedy in her early life. She was quoted as saying, "We believe the experiences of early childhood can leave a more significant impact later in life. We want to reach every single school in Bangladesh to train them for mental health, body shaming, and bullying." And now let's talk about saving the world's oceans through YouTube. Meet Mark Rober and Jimmy Donaldson, aka Mr. Beast. They are two of the world's most popular YouTube personalities who are on a mission to raise $30 million to remove 30 million pounds of waste from oceans, rivers and beaches over the next 3 years. Now, if you're over the age of 25, these names probably won't sound familiar, but mention them to any young members of your family and they will reply with loud squeals and fist pumps. At 23 years old, Kansas-born Jimmy, Mr. Beast, is one of the most viewed people on YouTube with over 72 million subscribers tuning into his big money giveaways and stunts. Meanwhile, 41-year-old Mark is an ex-NASA engineer who applies his experience from working on projects like the Curiosity rover at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory to crazy experiments for kids, making him the world's coolest science teacher with almost 20 million subscribers. The two YouTubers first joined forces in 2019, turning their popularity into purpose with Hashtag Team Trees, a partnership with the Arbor Day Foundation, where they aim to raise $20 million to plant 20 million trees. The initiative became one of the largest creator-led fundraising campaigns in history, bringing in over $23 million, and 2 years on is still receiving enough donations to plant 2,600 trees per day. That is extraordinary. For Team Seas, Jimmy and Mark have partnered with non-for-profit organisation Ocean Conservancy, a volunteer-based program and ocean cleanup which uses a solar-powered machine to remove trash. Both organisations have pledged to remove 1 pound of rubbish for every dollar raised. Since launching on October 29th, Team Seas has already raised over $17 million. Now, although many people still see YouTube as a platform for, you know, silly videos and gaming, Jimmy believes it can be a powerful driver for change and wants to prove that Gen Z can make a difference beyond just retweets. And there's every chance the difference that these two YouTubers make will impact not just their sizable audiences, but future generations as well. Mark was quoted as saying, "Some of the challenges we face won't be solved in our lifetime, but this is one that we can solve. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch is big, but in 10 years, with the right funding, we can remove that out of the ocean." A big cheers to that. What incredible human beings. And you know what? My job as the host of this podcast and as the translator on the topic of purpose is to notice the common threads, to notice the patterns. Now, I used to think that purpose was something that was given to us in turning points, epic moments of transformation that are born in times of crisis, or more than often in times of crisis. I was so convinced of this idea that I even named an entire series of this podcast, The Turning Point. But over time, I've changed my mind. If I'm honest in looking back on my own, I guess, personal journey and the trauma that I have navigated through, I needed to believe that purpose was the cherry on top, that somehow hard times were made sweeter because I own a purpose. You know, I got the trophy at the end of all the hard work. You know, today I don't believe it's that complicated. Now, sure, having a sense of purpose may help people get through harder times and give them a focus, but I'm not sure if that is necessarily where purpose is born. That, in a way, is too complicated, and purpose is not that exclusive. If anything, it's inclusive. It's a cherry on the platter for the happy people, the sad people, the wounded, or those who live life in the rhythm of wonder. It's for all of us, and a cherry that any of us can pick up. Quite simply, purpose comes into our life because we choose to live our lives purposefully. Just like Pablo, Farouz, Mark and Jimmy, people with a sense of purpose make a very intentional decision to take action. They have applied a positive intent within a system, for a project, or within a culture or community. What defines that system as being meaningful will generally come down to the story that matters the most to that person at any given point in time. The real question here is what matters and to whom? And within that, what is it that inspires an individual's duende? You may ask, what is duende? Now, to have a duende is a Spanish term for a heightened state of emotion, expression, and authenticity, and is often connected with the dance of the flamenco. If purpose is our flamenco, then it is courage that inspires us to take the first steps, and it is the duende that leads us to the personal transformation we seek. This is the fire of purpose. And thus, the common thread between any human being who seeks to change the world is one or many courageous decisions. None of the human beings in the stories that I just shared waited to be knighted with purpose. They simply chose to be brave and stepped into the unknown. They didn't discover their purpose there. They chose it. They showed up with courage, and from there, the duende was born. So how do we define courage? By definition, courage is the choice and willingness to confront agony, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. It is interesting to note that, like purpose, it is not a personality trait that we are born with, and it is something that we can learn to master. It's teachable. Courage is also innate to what it means to be human. Only last week, my three-year-old started a new preschool. And in the days leading up to her first day, we talked about what it meant to feel nervous, and we acknowledged the butterflies that had begun to emerge in her tummy. Now, I consciously made an effort to hold space for her nerves, while at the same time not trying to fix them or minimize them with comments like, "Don't worry, darling, there's nothing to be nervous about." Why? For two reasons. The first one being that, of course, she was nervous, just like I am anytime I attempt something new. And the second reason was I knew that within her experience of fear and vulnerability, she was also being called to use one of the most innate skills that she has available. And that skill is the mastery of courage, a skill that over the course of her lifetime could very well be the most important tool in her wisdom kit. The thing is, while we assume that courage is all about strength and bravado, it does not exist without vulnerability. And maybe this is why some people talk about finding purpose in a crisis. I no longer believe that it is the crisis that gives birth to purpose. That said, I do believe that crisis widens our chasm of vulnerability, and that vulnerability calls us to be more courageous human beings, to make more courageous decisions about how we show up in the world. It gives us the fire to show up with a different perspective. In other words, the more we fear, the more we are inspired to courageously choose love in order to move forward again. As some of you who follow Future Crunch may know, our co-founder, Gus, was in ICU at the end of last year. And for Gus, his family and the entire team, we felt immense vulnerability. Yet alongside that vulnerability, I observed our team show more courage than before. And there was more camaraderie than any other time. A sense that we would get through this together. And so together we made a decision to set sail into the wild seas of vulnerability, and in doing so we chose courage. The result was a deeply meaningful connection to a shared purpose, knowing that our job was to keep the ship sailing no matter what. The threads of the rope that make up Future Crunch kept the sails in motion when it mattered most, and that rope grew thicker and stronger because of the storm. And for the record, our co-captain is recovering and already back on the navigation deck, even though he should probably take a little more time out on the sun lounger. As the saying goes, you can't keep a good man or woman down. The point here is that if you want to understand purpose, then understand courage. And even more importantly, understand that these skills are within you already. They are in your DNA. All you need to do is make a courageous decision and then keep making them over and over and over again. The next question that may be lingering in your mind at this stage of the game is this. If purpose is a courageous decision, then what influences that decision in the first place? In the 20th century, hierarchies were everything. Social hierarchies are broadly defined as systems of social organisation in which some individuals enjoy a higher social status than others. And these hierarchies are beautifully captured in story shapes. Well, to be more specific around what shape I'm talking about the shape of a pyramid. Just as a side note, Angus Harvey, our co-founder, wrote an incredible article on the Future Crunch blog called Collapse and Renewal. So if you're wanting some background context on story shapes and how they work, before I go on, I'd highly recommend jumping on the Future Crunch website and taking a look at that. And also, here's a little clip from my interview with Dr. Angus Harvey, where I ask him all about story shapes. He frames this up beautifully.
All right, so this was really interesting. I didn't know about this before I started doing the research. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that our stories kind of have these huge peaks and then these huge declines. And it actually comes from the Greeks. And the Greeks really loved the genre of tragedy. And the whole point of tragedy as a genre of storytelling is that you have these huge swings, you know, these huge kind of upswings and downswings in the protagonist's fortunes. And then they always have like a kind of a moment of climax in their stories, this kind of peak moment where things, you know, couldn't get any worse and suddenly start getting better, or vice versa, this moment where everything is going fantastically and then suddenly everything collapses and falls apart. And so that actually turns out to just be a preference for a kind of story rather than the way that all stories happen. And what's really interesting is that in Western cultures in particular, we've imbibed this idea of wild swings in fortune so deeply that we just think that that's how all stories operate now. Mm. So if you look at all of our most popular stories, Cinderella, Frozen, you know, all basically all of the Disney stories, The Godfather, Avatar, whatever, you name it, Squid Game.
I just started watching that on the weekend.
In all of those stories, you have this same kind of story arc that takes place. Now, the story arcs can often be in different shapes, and Kurt Vonnegut sort of talks about five or six different shapes of stories, but they always have this up and down motion that, you know, things are on the up, and then things are suddenly on the down again, and then things are on the up, and then things are on the down again. So it's this sequence of collapse and renewal. And that's how we like our stories. And so we think we start to impose those narratives on the world around us as well. That's where we get this idea that, you know, are we in the upswing or the downswing of history? But it turns out that that's not actually how history takes place. That history is so complex, and that the human story is so vast and so interwoven, that to try and impose narrative on it might give us some comfort. So that, you know, when we try to look at, we try to make stories about history because that helps us understand this. We sort of say, okay, that was a golden age. That was a dark age. That was when things were turning around. That was where things were falling apart. But history doesn't actually work like that. The human story is so vast, so complex, and so interconnected that to impose narrative on it doesn't give us an accurate reflection of what's actually going on.
So when we look at this idea of story shapes, we begin to understand how story shapes mold our worldview at a deeply unconscious level. And so when it comes to understanding what influences our courageous decision to live a purpose-driven life, then we must unlock the story shape that has underpinned a widely held view of the basis of human motivation. A story shape, in today's case, known as Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There we have another pyramid. Now, Maslow's hierarchy of needs is an idea in psychology proposed by Abraham Maslow in his 1943 paper, A Theory of Human Motivation, in the journal Psychological Review. His theories parallel many other theories of human developmental psychology, some of which focus on describing the stages of growth in humans. The theory is usually shown as a pyramid in illustrations. Maslow's hierarchy of needs is used to study how humans intrinsically partake in behavioral motivation. Maslow used the term physiological, safety, belonging and love, social needs and esteem, along with self-actualization, to describe the pattern through which human motivations generally move. This means that in order for motivation to arise at the next stage, each stage must be satisfied within the individual themselves. We must move up the pyramid. And if you want to have, you know, if you want to take a look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, just throw it into Google search engine and you will find 1,001 examples. Now, the goal in Maslow's hierarchy is to attain the fifth level or stage, self-actualization. And self-actualization is commonly seen as the link between human motivation and purpose. And I have to say, the conversation around Maslow's hierarchy of needs comes up a lot. I've touched on it many times across many different interviews. But the thing is, there is an overriding problem with this story shape when it comes to understanding what influences and motivates people to choose purpose. And it is this: we cannot achieve any of these needs without social connection and collaboration. And social connection and collaboration exist not in a pyramid shape. Instead, they exist within a circle, a system. And in addition to that, our lives don't happen in straight lines. If there is anything we have learned over the past 2 years, it's that our lives exist in a thread of both collapse and renewal, of decay and of birth. Everything about nature shows us that two things can be true, and that none of those things exist on a timeline or sit in a sequential order as we traverse up a hill towards a metaphoric holy grail. But we believe this because stories have shapes, and thus we have bought into pyramid thinking. And this is the kind of thinking that leads us to believe that in our lives we either succeed or fail, that we must choose success over significance, that competition is more valuable than collaboration, and that our self-worth is determined by our net worth, our relationship status, or our ability to produce offspring. We divide and conquer in order to win. We judge each other and judge ourselves based on a set of inbuilt rules determining whether we are better than or less than another human being or life form. Ego runs the race, and we try and validate our wounded selves, and in the process we forget what a miracle we really are. We forget the miracle of the symbiotic, interconnected, and dynamic nature of what it is to be alive. The truth is, we can never make a courageous decision while we hover on the side of an illusionary mountain with no real peak. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to get to my deathbed and not have this one figured out. I'm 40 and I'm already tired of the climb, yet it is so hard to get off because this is a mountain that is built upon centuries of ideologies. That said, even the greatest of pyramids can fall to the ground, and what can take centuries to build can and does fall apart in days. In 2022, we call that collapse COVID-19. Since we are looking at story shapes, maybe it's time we picked a new shape. Although the circle, it's not really new at all. Prehistoric people were building stone circles 4,000 years ago, and you have probably heard of the most famous stone circle at Stonehenge in England. In ancient Greek culture, the circle was thought of as the perfect shape. Greek mathematicians were fascinated by the geometry of circles and explored their properties for centuries. Circles are a natural physical phenomena. When scientists look at the building blocks of humankind, our DNA, of course, they find spirals or stacked interlocking circles. Indeed, in the walls of our fingertips, the irises of our eyes, our cells, and the egg that gave each of us life, we are made of circles, and we live on a circular planet that receives the light of our circular life-giving sun. Our survival depends on circles. Circles are considered to be sacred. In Buddhism, circular mandalas are deemed a diagram or symbol of an ideal universe. Mandalas come in many forms. Often they are painted on scrolls and taken with travellers over long distances across the Eurasian continent. The word mandala in Sanskrit means magic circle or from the essence. The distinguished psychologist Carl Jung found that mandala drawings non-verbally express the intuitive movement towards wholeness. And that is where we find purpose. Although we can look for it, one need not search for meaning in the mandala. There is intrinsic meaning and value in the practice itself. In Aboriginal culture, the use of a yarning circle is an important process. It has been used by Indigenous people from around the world for centuries to learn from a collective group, build respectful relationships, and to preserve and pass on cultural knowledge. Women's circles are intimate gatherings where women discuss goals, concerns, stories, and advice, and they have also been around since prehistory. Even in exploring purpose, we see the circle rise. Some of you may have heard of the Buddhist teaching known as Dharma. It is a term often used to describe purpose. We speak of having a Dharma. The symbol of Dharma is the Dharma wheel, or what is known as the Dharma chakra, because like a wheel, our Dharma moves from country to country in accordance with changing conditions and people's karmic inclinations. In other words, purpose itself is in movement. It travels between systems, and it is also circular, as in the wheel. The meaning of the wheel as a symbolic entity is so, you know, so similar to the circle, but it has the additional quality of movement, and movement generates energy. Given the perfection of the circle and its presence in every aspect of what it means to be alive, I have to say I'm curious. Why is it that we keep trying to understand human motivation through the shape of a pyramid when everything that captures what it truly means to be alive and breathing is in fact in the shape of a circle? And to come full circle, if we look at these themes, the theme of story shapes, through this lens, how can an entire economic system that is built upon the shape of a pyramid enable the sustainability required for our species to survive? I guess this is the exact reason why the circular economy has become such a hot topic. For those of you who have not heard of this term, a circular economy is a model of production and consumption which involves sharing, leasing, reusing, repairing, refurbishing, and recycling existing materials and products as long as possible. In the epic ballad, A Circle of Life, Elton John shared these words, and no, I am not going to sing them. It's the circle of life, and it moves us all through despair and hope, through faith and love, till we find our place on the path unwinding. So how do we find our path and our place in this great circle of life? We make courageous decisions. So let's now dive into the middle of the circle. In order to truly understand what it means to show up for a purpose, then we also need to understand the role of causality. Why? Because having a purpose is the result of causality. The influence that one event, process, state, or object causes in creating another event, process, state, or object. As a metaphor, the domino effect captures the essence of this idea. The effect is partly dependent on the cause. Purpose, in a traditional sense, cannot exist without this relationship in play because it relies on influence and impact. So in order to understand this idea, it's helpful to look at the basis for systems thinking. Now, systems thinking requires a shift in mindset away from the linear to the circular. It is a new story shape, and it hinges on the idea that everything is interconnected. When it comes to systems thinking, the goal is synthesis as opposed to analysis, which is a fancy way of breaking complexity down based on interconnections, as opposed to the traditional Western way of thinking, which breaks things into individual parts. Another aspect of systems thinking is the idea that from small things or from small systems, bigger or smarter systems grow. This is known in systems thinking as emergence. Take the example of the humble bee. Put simply, bees pollinate our plants, which means they carry pollen between plants of different sexes to fertilise them, or even between different parts of the same plant, which help plants reproduce. And from the reproduction of plants, what was once a seed becomes a tree, and in time there's a garden and, I don't know, if left untamed, a wild jungle. Every single tree also holds its own system, and from there we continue to emerge. In fact, every part of our universe is in a perpetual state of expansion. Now, another interesting thing about systems thinking is what is known as feedback loops. And feedback loops are a term commonly used in systems, which is where we can observe, understand, and influence positive or negative connections. There are two types of feedback loops. A loop will be reinforcing or it will be balancing. So reinforcing is it's the same as something, or it will be balancing, as in there is a yin and a yang. Now, while a reinforcing loop sounds like it should be a good thing, it usually happens when diversity is out of balance. So Think about what happens when, say, algae grows exponentially in a pond, or when there are, I don't know, too many white guys with beards on the leadership team. You know, lucky I'm in our leadership team with Gus and Tane to balance that one out. But anyway, you get my point. Things just get out of balance. What we actually need are balancing loops. Systems thrive when there is diversity baked in. Now, nature has this symbiotic balance nailed. I mean, if you just think about, you know, the hunted, you know, the hunted and the prey as an example, there's a nice balance. There's a symbiotic connection between those two things. And humans have so much to learn from nature. And we can learn a lot about the nature of purpose. When it comes to creating meaningful lives, the systems we work in may be project-based, like planting more trees. They may be focused on the community. It might be your role in a family system, or your role in a team, or as a part of an organization's culture. Remember, more than one thing can be true, and your purpose can and does exist in all of these places, but to be more specific, in all of these systems. So ask yourself, in what systems can you make a courageous decision? Because that is a far more powerful question than what is my life purpose? If you look at the feedback loops in that system, are they reinforcing or are they creating balance? Where does your influence matter the most in being able to restore balance in a system? And if you look at that system, is the emergence also balancing the systems that exist around the system? Yes. I can feel you all. Your brains are exploding. I'll pull it back. At the end of the day, what you do makes a difference. And if you want to ignite purpose and create meaning, you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make and in what system. It seems simple enough, which makes me wonder where our understanding of purpose went wrong. And again, it comes down to the story shapes. It all hinges on the pyramid that reflects our individual pursuits for self-actualization. As a result, in the West, we often form our perspectives based on the idea of I think, so therefore I am. This is an ego-based perspective that is really anchored in, I guess, our connection to our attachment to individualization, to individualism, our ability to think. This mindset alongside pyramid thinking is why I believe purpose has been considered such a lofty and confusing topic. True purpose doesn't make sense in the context of ego. It doesn't make sense in the context of individual parts. It just doesn't work. However, Indigenous cultures all over the world form their perspectives and their sense of identity on the notion that I am located and I have place, so therefore I am. This perspective acknowledges the environment and the galaxy beyond as part of one's identity. It acknowledges an individual's existence within a circle, within a system. In an Indigenous context, the system influences the person just as the person influences the system. They are always interconnected. Now, there is a famous Indigenous saying that sums up this connection beautifully. The author is unknown, but to me, the words are written in the sky. May as well be here. We are as where we are. So, where are you? In what system? And how does that influence your courageous choice to show up with a purposeful intent? Now is the time that we open our eyes. So, in this final section of today's deep dive, I want to dovetail into some of the other outcomes for leaders who are looking for a more nourishing take on purpose. If we understand that human beings are multi-purposed, as in you can have more than one purpose, go free yourself, and that purpose itself sits inside of systems, then we also see the true magic of what it is to belong. to be a part of something greater than ourselves. Last year, I interviewed a neuroscientist by the name of Paul Zak. Now, based on a variety of studies, Paul concluded that the individuals who applied what I like to call as positive causality, or in layman's terms, those who were generous, released more oxytocin than those who didn't. Oxytocin is a hormone most commonly known as being responsible for feelings of love. It is significant within the context of the systems we've just discussed because it is what enables human beings to bond. So in that sense, a sense of purpose, generosity, enables us to release oxytocin, but oxytocin enables us to bond, which in turn creates a feeling of purpose. And you know what? This is where the impact of purposeful intent is bigger than the actual impact zone. It is the positive effect of the splash. In a business, the ROI of purpose in a system actually lies in its ability to create safety, to build trust, and to enable genuine human connection based on the science of belonging. A science that is deeply innate and a part of our evolution process. According to Jason Martian and Jill Suti of the Greater Good Science Centre, when we give to others, we not only make them feel closer to us, we also feel closer to them. This is because being generous and kind encourages us to perceive others in a more positive light and fosters a sense of community, and there's that word again, a feeling of interconnectedness. An interconnected system, which is a truly vast network, one that is non-linear and self-organizing. See, purpose cannot exist without the system, and the system cannot exist without the causality of purpose. That said, when these things come together, the synthesis is what ignites meaning for both. And this is why we have what is referred to as collective consciousness or conscience, which is a fundamental sociological concept that refers to the set of shared beliefs, ideas, attitudes, and knowledge that are common to a social group or society. Beliefs, ideas, and attitudes that build trust and that philosophically and scientifically bond human beings. And this is the most useful outcome for purpose alongside the emergence of culture, because people feel fulfilled at work, they deeply care for each other, and they are genuinely aligned in taking action to ignite a better future. So that's a wrap for episode one, but there is a part two coming in about 6 weeks. Today I have presented a lot of the ideas behind the DNA of purpose without actually taking you through the DNA of purpose process. So as I said, in a few weeks, I will be on the airwaves with Tane Hunter, my partner in purpose and the co-founder of Future Crunch, who also happens to be a genetic scientist. And together we will be taking you on a journey through both the science and the soul of the very subject this podcast is named after, the DNA of purpose. And what's this space? Episode two coming. We have some game-changing guests coming up on season four of the podcast. And to everyone listening, have a truly wonderful, abundant, and beautiful 2022. It's amazing to be back. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, if you would like updates on upcoming episodes as they are released, in addition to good news posts from the world of science and technology, please follow Future Crunch on social media, or if you care to do so, sign up to our newsletter at futurecrunch.com. You can also download our ebook on what we refer to as The Great Transformation, which is available at our website. And if you have time, please leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. This podcast has been produced by the team at Supernova Tribe Studio.